Hey, everybody. It's another episode of Magical Boys, your favorite video game, pop culture, anime bullshit podcast brought from a queer perspective. It's me, your usual host, Ruben Medina, and also your beautiful and paralleled perfect co-host, DJ.
Is that me?
Kirkland. Yes.
Beautiful and unparalleled?
Yes.
That is the nicest thing anyone has ever said about me.
Yes.
You're so sweet. Thank you. Hi, everybody. Hey. Welcome
we
to
just like
show.
Each other, guys. That's
we,
all.
We just like
We're
each
just
other
fans of each other.
We,
yeah.
like, I don't stand for a lot of things, but I stand for Ruben. It's true.
Guys, I know there's been a lot of speculation online that we're not actually friends, that this is just a business opportunity. Let's squash the rumors right now.
Like, if we had it our way, like, we would just be, like, together all of the time.
Just hanging out.
Yeah, just like...
All the time.
Just like being weird all the time. Yeah. And it would be so much fun. It'd be great.
I'm not doing this for the fame that we've obviously accrued.
I know. I'm not doing this for the fame and the fortune.
I'm not keeping it together just for that. I actually really like DJ.
Yeah. Like, I really like Ruben a lot, too. And I love that... I think both you and I do this is, like, when we each are, like, individually drinking, we're like... Mm-hmm. On Twitter, we're like, guys, listen. I have a lot of...
It's like, I'm really glad.
It's like, I have a lot of feelings, and the feelings that I have is that I'm glad to be queer as fuck, and I'm glad for this bitch over here that I do this podcast with.
I do think it's funny that it's just like, obviously, I'm queer 24/7, but then I drink, and I'm just like, I gotta tell people.
Yes, I need everyone to know that I am super queer.
I am literally, like, once I have enough drinks, I turn into that that Street Fighter video that I keep watching with, who's that new character?
Oh, for Manette, yeah.
Yeah, for Manette.
Look at her walk. Yes,
have a sit, queen.
Take her load off. Yes.
Oh, God, so good.
I do have a man, thank you.
That part makes me laugh so hard every time.
I scream every time I see it, and every time he says that, I just see that person saying it to someone on the street, and they're like walking with like, yes, I do have a man, thank you, and they're just like walking away.
And also, though, can we just talk about how like well designed Manette is, though? Just so, like, how
it is bizarre. So like, Street Fighter V is this weird thing for me to where not all of the characters were modeled in the same house for that game. Some of the designs were outsourced to different studios for those characters.
Okay, that makes total sense.
That's why, like, some characters don't look good and others look good.
Like, she doesn't look like the rest of the game.
No, she doesn't. Like, Manette looks perfect. Like, why doesn't the rest of the game look as good as Manette? It's weird. I tweeted this the other day. I was like, Manette is the best thing to happen to Street Fighter V. She's great. I haven't played her yet because I haven't put Street Fighter V back into my system in months. So
sorry.
Yeah, so sorry, not sorry about it. But she's amazing and I do want to play her, but she looks so fucking complicated with like the orb and all that shit. And I'm probably be really bad with her if I played her, but she's everything.
And of course, we're talking about a visual thing that you guys can't see and don't know what it is. But I think if you Google like Manette Street Fighter walk, it's pretty. You'll find it. It's just like it's a very, very extra boy just loving Manette's walk cycle, and it's very funny and very good.
Yeah, it's really. It's so we. I think we say it every episode that 2017 has been trash, but. The content that people have been providing the internet with has been so good.
They know. They stepped up.
Yeah, and I think it's great because it's like, I think we all know that this year is shit, but people are still just getting their life to the things that they escape into. And I love that, and I'm here for that, and I'm all about that.
And I think, like, specifically, Black and queer social media has been so, I mean, and I think this has been the case.
It's been so lit this year. It's crazy.
And, like, even with Vine gone, because I thought Vine went away, and I was like, there goes, like, Black social media mm-hmm. content, because that was what so much of Vine was, and it was so good. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's funny, though, because I say that, like, now it's a new thing, mm-hmm. but if you look at pretty much almost all slang that gets adopted at some point came from queer or trans or Black or other POC culture that just kind of makes its way into the, like, vernacular, mm-hmm. because it's like white people can't make up cool words. I'm trying to think about it, and I'm like, when's the last time there was a generally cool word that was like, yeah, that came from the burbs, that came from Cindy and the Hamptons.
And it's one of those things where it's like, you know how, like, a word permeates through, you know, current pop culture generations and all that stuff, but then when it gets to adults, or mm-hmm. or in some cases white people,
it's dead.
So there's this show, so, like, you know the term, and I think our listener base all knows the term throwing shade, uh-huh. and which comes directly from Black queer trans ball culture coming from New York. It came about from that. I mean, if you haven't watched Paris is Burning, that's where throwing shade came from Paris
and that's
is Burning.
Like, you shouldn't, for me, I'm just like, you should at least know what Paris is Burning is if yeah. you're going to be saying throwing shade.
Right. And it's back on Netflix, so there's no excuse for you not to watch Paris is Burning, which you should, because it's everything. Mm-hmm. And so there's a podcast called Throwing Shade. And you would think, in my mind, when I hear a podcast called Throwing Shade, I think it's going to be very, like, POC-focused, trans, people of color just, like, living their lives. It's very that in my mind. But then it's, like, a white woman and, like, a gay white man. And I'm like, this is everything that I didn't expect this to be. Mm. And when words start to lose meaning is when shit like this happens. And I'm like, ugh, really? But
it was, like, the opposite of yeah. that Manette video. That's what I felt like,
yeah,
the opposite.
Yeah, it's the exact opposite of that.
Like, no enthusiasm at all.
None whatsoever.
I think the catchiest, like, word or words that white people have come up with in the past probably 10 years is, like, $5 footlong. That might be the most, the biggest cultural, like, contribution. So I'm trying to think of what else, possibly.
I mean, $5 footlong is important.
I mean, it's very good. I have not been into a Subway in forever because they smell weird.
Oh my God, they do. They smell really, really weird. It's like, it's deli meats, but not good deli meats.
And to be fair, like, I'm not trying to fucking shit on Subway right now because we've all been there. We've yeah. all had the teriyaki chicken.
Which goes off. It's good.
Yes, it does. I've been like, please pour the entire shaker of oregano on that. Mm-hmm. Not on that one, but on any sub otherwise.
Yeah.
But they just, every time I'm in one, they smell weird. I've had friends that have worked at Subways. They smell weird when they come home from Subway. Like,
you're not wrong. This is an accurate thing that happens.
Anyway, this is a show about video games and anime and being queer.
Oh my God. $5 footlongs. But what have you been playing?
Can you imagine, though, if, like, POCs and queers were like, we're going to steal $5 footlongs. That's such a cool term.
You're like, yes, bitch, come through, $5 footlong, yes. And it's like, I don't think $5 footlong will ever happen, but, mm-hmm. you know, it's fun to think about.
We could make it happen. Oh my God. Okay, so before we go into this really quick, DJ, you know that I say narsty?
Uh-huh.
And I've been saying narsty.
You've been saying narsty, yeah.
For months now.
Yes.
It's as far as I know, a thing that
you,
me and some
up.
Friends made up.
Yeah.
SNL had a skit this weekend.
Yeah. Yes.
They said narsty.
I was going to text you because I watched that video. And I was
SNL,
like,
trifling, stealing my words.
See?
Listening to me? They got spies.
This is white feminism in working. This is what white feminism is. But to their credit, I do, because I was like, this skit is cute. This skit is really cute.
It's a good skit. Yeah.
And then, why can't I think of her name?
Which, Kate McKinnon?
Leslie Jones. Leslie Jones was like, hey, like, you realize that all of this shit you're talking about is way worse for women of color? And they're like, oh God, yes. Jesus Christ, yes. I was like, golf clap. Good job, SNL. Intersectionality. There you go.
You know Leslie Jones is not going to be in a sketch and, like, not.
Yeah.
Like,
bring it together. Yeah, wrap it all up.
Yes.
Yeah. No, it was... Yeah, I watched that this weekend, and I thought, this is a good skit, SNL.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you.
But anyways, SNL, I'm coming for you because you stole my word.
You better sue somebody at SNL.
Yeah, I copyrighted Narcy, okay? I was going to make Narcy merchandise. Now what will I do?
Still make it, duh.
Okay, so the worst part of this, though, is that now people, when I say Narcy, they'll be like, oh, yeah, like that SNL sketch.
Like that SNL sketch. And you're like, no, bitch, I've been saying this for months.
That is the worst. And this must be what the entire, like, ball culture, POC culture, this is what they feel like all the time.
Yeah.
When we take their words.
Yeah, it's true.
I understand now.
It's true, yeah. See, it all circles back.
Guys, this is what it's like to be a minority.
Yeah, when people, like, take your shit all the time, and then, like, people say, they're like, oh my God, it's so funny, like, you totally made that up, and it's like, no, I stole it from brown people.
Yeah, it's like, we started this. Yeah. I started Narcy. Well, they didn't say Thirsty, at least, which is the new offshoot of Narcy. Which we were trying to define Thirsty, and I feel like Thirsty means that, like, you are, like, literally thirsty, but, like, for, like, fluids. Like, you just want... Like, real gross. Because Narcy's gross. Narcy means, you need a tarp. That's how Narcy...
Yeah, you gotta roll it out.
You gotta put a tarp down. So Narcy's like, you want fluids of some sort, any sort.
Yeah, just everywhere.
Mm.
Live your life.
Thirsty.
Get it.
Just want to drink them up. Anyway, video games and anime.
Yes, I love video games and anime. So what are you playing?
DJ. Oh, I was gonna ask you the same question. Oh. How cute.
Cute. See, we're like... totally in sync and all of that stuff. Internet, we do like each other. See?
Okay, but go first.
Me?
just go do it.
Fine. Okay. So if you follow me on Twitter, I started Yakuza 0 the other day, and it's really fun. Like, it's as good as everybody says that it was on the internet. So I'm super into it. I really like it a lot. It's the gameplay of Yakuza, because you hear a lot of people, like, talking about the game itself, but not so much about the gameplay. It's like a beat-em-up.
Yeah.
It's like Shenmue. Like, so Austin Walker actually said it best. And he said that... Shout out to Austin Walker and Danica Herron from the Waypoint Radio podcast.
Everybody at Waypoint.
Everybody at Waypoint. I just bow down to Waypoint again. We stand legends. From POC, we stand legends, and we stand Waypoint Radio podcast. We stand POC, we stand queer shit all day. But they both said, both Austin and Danica said, that, like, the gameplay in Yakuza 0 is Shenmue, but good. Because as great of a game in and of itself as Shenmue is... the gameplay isn't great.
DJ, I have a hot take right now.
What's your... Tell me.
I would say... Fresh out the oven from 2000... I don't even remember when the Dreamcast was relevant. 1999, actually, because it came out 9999, because Final Fantasy VIII came out that day, because the MTV VMAs were also
that day. And I remember that specifically being like, 9999,
yes, exactly. 99. It was such a big thing.
Yeah.
Shenmue wasn't a good game. Like, it had good ideas. I think what it did was incredibly interesting for the time. But, like, I think Shenmue is, like, a bad game that has a lot of good ideas, and none of them were executed well. But it absolutely, I agree, though. I think from what I've seen of Yakuza's like, hey, how do we make this good? If there is any, like, loving God, Shenmue 3 will just be a Yakuza game, basically.
Yeah. like the studio
if
that
Shenmue 3
does,
happens.
The studio that does Yakuza will say, hey girl, let's work together to make Shenmue not garbage.
And I mean, it's Sega, and I don't know if it's still Sega that would be working on Shenmue or not.
Yeah, I don't know.
As a publisher.
Yeah,
but.
I don't know. But yeah, there's that. And it's been really good. I've only played through the first chapter of the game, and I really enjoyed it. The beat-em-up combat's really fun. I really like Kiryu a lot. He's, you know, very handsome. And the set piece is 1980s Japan, which looks and feels amazing. So I'm super into that. But then Xenoblade Chronicles 2 came out. And I'm all into that anime bullshit. So
TJ was like, I know I love these real ass Japanese people, but I need some fake ass anime Japanese people.
Anime fucking bullshit. And it's really good. It's really, really good. I like it a lot. If you've been on social media, you might have seen the thing that's going around about that fucking crazy ass looking rabbit girl. That's one of the blades that you can get in the game, where it looks like her fucking whole back is broken. And
oh, is she a rabbit girl?
Yeah, she's a rabbit, and her titties.
Where
are
her ears?
The pigtails are her ears.
Oh, okay. The cat girl design in that game is cute as shit.
Yes. So here's the thing, right? There are a couple of really bad designs, and we talked about how bad Pyra's design is.
Yeah, like, Pyra and that girl are both real bad.
So I think Pyra's design is salvageable. The palette of Pyra's design is really good. I really like the colors in her design, but in the artwork for her, her titties aren't nearly as big as they are in the game.
Well, here's the thing in the game is that everyone's titties in the game, they like project like horizontally off their body, like straight out.
Yeah.
They don't sit at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes it look really bad. Like Pyra's 2D art, I don't hate it. It's trashy and it has lots of things that don't make sense. Mainly like her skirt area is the biggest offender of just like being stupid.
Yes.
But like you said, the palette's really good. Like it's a cute design. But man, in the game, immediately it's so bad.
So I feel like there are some things that can be remedied. It's like you have to choose something that you're going to show off on her. Like if you're going, I feel like Pyra's design would read so much better if she had way smaller boobs. That design, yes. the lines, the actual lines of the design itself are really, really good lines and contort to the body really well. That can be very flattering, but they put these two fucking cantaloupes on the 3D model, like full-on fucking cantaloupes on the design, and it's all over the place. And they have the nerve, to put, like, LED green lights going around the titty because you didn't already see that these giant, like, torpedo boobs were there. But let's put some LED lights on it so that you can really see them. That you can know that they're there.
That's my issue with it design-wise more than anything, is that, like, when you said torpedo, like, I've played plenty of games, too many games, where, like, female characters, their boobs are just kind of, like, spheres, like, popped onto their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Pyra's, though, they stick out so much. There's that image that's everywhere that's Pyra and the main character, like, in profile. And she has a titty shelf that is as wide as her body is from the back of her, like, torso to the front of her torso.
It's really...
Like, it's another head. It's a whole other head.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good. And that's a problem. And I've seen both sides of the argument from people. I'm like, I understand that the game is fantasy. That's fine. But I feel like the people that are on the side are like, well, it's fantasy. It can be whatever it wants. True, but that doesn't mean it's not above critique. And that doesn't mean that I don't like the game or the art itself. I've said it before on the previous show. I was like, the physical art of Pyra is good. It's a great drawing. That design is not bad. There are things about the design that are bad that should be changed, and that design is salvageable. Like her being sexy, like a sexy sword design, she can still be a sexy sword all she wants to, but like she doesn't have to have giant boobs and wear a barely there booty shorts and then have like a weird fucking, like, Evangelion thong on too. There's just so many things that are there that don't need to be there, and that design could have been really, really great, because about 40% of that design is good.
Well, and that's why, like, and it's, that's the thing, it's not that it's sexy, because that's fine, because I like fucky shit all the time. And there's plenty of other designs I've seen in that game, especially like looking at the 2D designs, that are really fucky, mm-hmm. but they're really good. I think what... Also, I don't like to also take it back to the, like, fantasy. It could be whatever it wants to be, look like whatever it wants to be.
Yeah.
Okay. There is a difference between whatever you want it to be and what you establish in your fantasy world, right?
Yes.
So when you make a fantasy, you're not just, I mean, unless it's absolute bullshit and it's terrible, you're not just throwing completely disparate things together. Mm-hmm. You make a cohesive world that has a language, that has a look, that has a style, that has rules. And, you know, Xenoblade is a fantasy world with animals that don't exist and with blades and everything else. But for the most part, everyone is human or humanoid.
Yep.
So you need to keep body proportions to something reasonable. And, like, I mean, I'm saying, like, even, like, anime reasonable for human characters. Mm-hmm. So when you drop, like, just titties that don't make any sense on characters, it looks really bad. She could still have, they could make her with big titties. I don't care. If the 2D, her titties in the 2D art are big.
Yeah.
They're not as big, but they actually, like, sit on her, and that's fine. It looks so bad otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the argument is always like, oh, they're trying to censor games and, like, SJWs, it's too sexy. No, I'm totally fine with it being sexy. Just make it good sexy, because that's not even, I don't know. And I feel like unless you're a 12-year-old or you don't know how tits work, or you are a lonely, like, hetero man, I don't understand how you see that and, like, you get aroused in any way.
Yeah, and here's the thing. People are like, well, a woman designed her, so, like, it doesn't apply. It's like, no, that doesn't work, because somebody can design something, and just because they are the same gender as the thing that they design doesn't mean that they don't play into male gaze norms that then is then profited off of. Like,
yes, and it's the same. It's the same as, like, when it's like, well, I have a black friend who thinks the Black Lives Matters movement is stupid, or I have a gay friend that, you know, likes Republicans, whatever the fuck. Like, it doesn't mean...
Right.
Like, it's not the same. What it is, like, it's just bad design. If you're a man or a woman or whatever, you can make bad design.
And what's so weird to me is that, again, it's this sense of ownership that people have over things, because they think by you critiquing something that you like, that it's a personal attack on you, and it's mm-hmm. not. It's like, it's, you know, like, with all things considered, I don't think that rabbit design is very bad. I think that it's just some anatomy things that need to be changed. The design is fine. Like, I'm good with the fucky rabbit design, that's cool, but, like, her back looks broken, and it just, there are things that are just, like, off.
It has a right angle. Yeah. Her back has a right angle.
Her back goes to a 90-degree angle. It's crazy.
Like, where her spine hits where her ass starts is a 90-degree angle.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, you can't, no, that's just bad. You have established that, again, these characters are humanoid in appearance. Mm-hmm. Ideally, I mean, how they're built looks like how humans are, so you assume their body has the same sort of skeleton, or at least the same rules. And then you give me something that has a right angle and it's lower back? No, that's just bad.
Yeah, I mean, and it's okay for something to be bad. And if you still enjoy it, that's fine.
Yes.
Like, it's okay if you like something that's bad. I love 90% of Bravo TV's really terrible shows. It's mm-hmm. fine. I know that they are bad, and that's okay. If somebody says that the Real Housewives shows are garbage, I don't take personal offense to that. I know that they're garbage, and that's fine. But am I going to tune in every week to watch Real Housewives of Atlanta? Abso-fucking-lutely. And that's okay. Like, I think people fall into this thing to where that because public perception of something is bad, like, that they don't like, like, and I'm talking purely about, like, things that you watch or things that you consume are bad. Like, there are, like, legitimate things that are bad, of course. Let's not take away from that. But if we're looking at a character design that's, like, all pure cheesecake and it's bad or whatever, that's fine. that someone designs it. And if you like it, that's fine, whatever. But if you're getting upset that people are critiquing it, you should then take a step back and ask yourself why you're getting mad that someone else doesn't have the same opinion as you about this character design. It's a game. Like, it's like, I don't know. It's a weird situation because it's like this show is a platform in which we critique things and we talk about things and that we like from a queer lens and all that stuff. And it's like some things are good and some things are bad. But it just because you and I might not think that something is good, if you out there that's listening to us love it, that's okay.
Like, yeah, DJ obviously likes this game.
I love the game. It's a fucking good game. It's a really good game. I've been having a blast. Both Brandon and I have been playing it, and we're roughly around the same place in the game, and we just like watched TV all weekend and played Xenoblade together, and it's been so much fun. There's a lot to love about this game, and what's cool is that all of the rare blade designs, the blades are kind of like this game's Pokemon, because you as the player character like actually wield the weapons, but the blades are the people that give you the power to wield these weapons, and they come in all different kinds of designs from different character designers from all over Japan, and there's a lot of really, really, really good, really beautiful designs. And what's really cool about it is that Silicon Era has been posting articles with revealing new rare blades in the game, and it shows the character art that they made for the game, and then it shows the 3D models of them, and when you summon these blades to be part of your arsenal, when they do their summoning animation and they pose, it's the same pose as the 2D art. And it looks so good. This game looks really good. It runs at a little bit lower than 1080p if you're a stickler about shit like that, so take that with what you will. At some points when you're playing in handheld mode, it gets a little fuzzy in areas, because there's so much that's happening in the game. The world is so massive and vast, and there's some frame rate issues with the game itself, but the art's really good for the most part. Aside from a few questionable designs for, like, Pyra and that rabbit girl, for the most part, the rest of the designs for the game are really good. They're really, really good.
That like, robot girl who has the, like, puffy shorts?
Yeah, Poppy.
That design's really, really excellent. Mm-hmm. Florin's design is really cute. Some of the rare blades, there's like some really fucky dude rare blades.
Yep.
Designs, like, there's a lot of good designs in that game.
Yeah.
Pyra and the rabbit girl just are not two of them, really.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. Like, people are focused on these two designs, but there are so many more blades in the game that you can get that have fan fucking tastic designs. And I hope people that actually get into Xenoblade Chronicles 2 sees how much more good outweighs those two kind of glaring bad designs. But beyond that, like, the game is really fun. If you like traditional JRPGs that are kind of more action oriented, if you've played Xenoblade Chronicles or Xenoblade Chronicles X before, you're gonna kind of be familiar with Xenoblade Chronicles 2. And 2 is huge. It's fun. The voice cast is actually really good. Their accents are everywhere. The main character, Rex, has, like, a thick Scottish kind of an accent, I think.
Weird.
Because in Xenoblade Chronicles, all the characters were... the localization for that game was done in the UK. And they kind of kept with that tradition going forward with the rest of the games. Except Xenoblade Chronicles X didn't have that. But I guess the Xenoblade Chronicles and Xenoblade Chronicles 2 kind of both fall in line with that. Because I think X is kind of its own thing. And there were rumors around that they're going to potentially release Xenoblade Chronicles X for the Switch if there's enough demand for it, quote-unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that there is, because it's a really good game. And you and I have both said this 1,000 times, that if they release 90% of the Nintendo Wii U library for Switch, it's going to breathe so much more life into that system, and people are going to really get to play a lot of really good games that they missed because they didn't have a Wii U.
The Wii U has a bunch of really, really good games.
There are a lot of really good games. I hope they re-release Bayonetta 1 and 2 on Switch. It would be great to have that portable. I would gladly play through Bayonetta 2 again on a handheld device.
Absolutely. There's like good, I don't know, I feel like there's good Wii stuff that no one played because people had them, but people didn't buy games for it unless they were first party. Like Zack and Wiki was excellent on the Wii as a kind of a platformy puzzle game.
Yeah.
But no one played that game. So DJ, I watched a video review of Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
Yes.
Nothing about it from the video review. Like, did not look like it was for me. You having played it, I know you love.
Yeah.
And also, I have not played a Xeno game since Xenogears. Mm-hmm. What is it about this game that you think makes it so good? Like sell me on it real quick.
So I'll start by saying the overall presentation of the game, minus a couple of those designs, are beautiful. And if you looked at the art from Xenoblade Chronicles X, and they have these sad, droopy anime faces,
they're terrible.
Seeing this kind of very modern anime art style translating into 3D, and it looks just like the 2D art, it's really something to behold. I think it's a really beautiful game. The story so far is actually pretty interesting. You take on the role as Rex, who is a salvager. And basically what that means is that he kind of dives into the sea, which is kind of like covered by clouds, right? And then there's an ocean underneath that. And he salvages, like, you know, materials and items and stuff like that for pay. But there is no physical landmass in this world of Allrest, which is the world. All of the different environments of the game are all on the backs of different titans. So titans are different monsters of the game. So there are full living and breathing ecosystems of people and life atop the backs of these monsters. And they're these huge, lush, really interesting worlds. Like the first world that I'm on right now is very, like, very green, very foresty. It's really, really cool. It feels very much like the kind of first town of a high fantasy RPG that you would be playing. It kind of feels a lot like that. There's like lots of wood, there's lots of giant trees and monsters all over the place. And what's really cool that I liked about Xenoblade, of all the Xenoblade games from the Wii going to Wii U and now the Switch, is that they're very open and very vast and very large games, and you kind of have a lot of freedom to do whatever you want. It's open world, quote unquote, but there's a clear directive of where you're supposed to go. But there are millions of side quests that you can do, very much like in more open world RPGs that are out now. So it feels very contemporary in that regard, to where you kind of have the freedom to do side quests as you choose and all this stuff. There's so much to discover. There's so much to do and just get lost in, like, you know, discovering new areas and all this stuff. And it's really fun. But kind of going back to the story with Rex, you are the salvager, and then you get a job from this group of people. And they're like, hey, we are going to go salvage the ship that's in the ocean, and you don't need to know all the details of it, but you just need to come and do this because we hired you to help with this. So you're going to do what you're supposed to do. And they're like, okay, cool, whatever. And Rex's like, all right, cool, that's fine. You guys are kind of assholes, but I guess I'll do it. And you go into the ship, and you're with two of these guys that later then become your enemy in the game, and you get to this abandoned ship, and they're looking for something. Like, they know that something is here that they really want to get, and Rex is the type of person that can actually link with a blade. So basically, it's kind of like in Captain America, to where if you could take the whatever it is that's injected into Captain America for him to become like the super soldier that he is, it's kind of like that in Xenoblade, where people some people have the capacity to wield a blade, not all people can. So blades are basically manifested from these things called core crystals, and when you link with a core crystal, if you have the capacity to wield a blade, it then manifests. And so,
okay, so combat looked, because this is like the part I'm interested in too. Mm-hmm. So combat looked really passive to me. what I was watching?
So it feels a lot like an MMO, so where you kind of, like, encounter an enemy, and then your character auto-attacks, right? It does, like, a three-hit combo that auto-attacks. But when you are linked with your blade gives you these other abilities that you can use. And the blade has passive abilities that it learns over time when you increase your affinity with the blade, meaning that you are doing combos with the blade and you're using them in battle consistently, they grow over time and they get more skills that they can do passively to benefit you in battle and different special attacks that you can do together. And
so they're Pokemon, basically, right?
Yeah, they're like Pokemon, but it's a little bit more passive. So it feels a lot like like a mix of Ni No Kuni and Yo-Kai Watch to me in terms of how the blades respond, but you have control over the... So there are blades, which are kind of like the Pokemon, and then there are drivers, which are the people that control the blades. So Rex is a driver. So Rex wields the weapons from the blade, so any blade that you equip has a weapon linked to it. And Rex will attack three times, but you can cancel out your attacks to do special attacks, and that's how your blade affinity increases. So you do like a three-hit combo, and on the third hit that does the most damage, if you do one of the blade abilities that you have, it increases your affinity with that blade, and you build up a meter to do a super attack. So you're
and you have so many blades like equipped. Like how many can you have equipped
you
at a time, or is it you have
up
everything
to three at a time? But you can have you can have like this whole arsenal of blades that you can switch out and use at any point in time. They're kind of like personas in that aspect, to where you can collect a certain amount of them and then you can dismiss them and or use different ones or whatever makes sense for you. And each of them have their own weapons. Each of them has their own playstyle. They have their own abilities. So like some of them have greaves. Some of them have lances. Some of them have swords. Some of them have like a blitz ball kind of a thing. So there are different weapon types and different character classes, and your characters are classed like, you know, healer, defense, and attackers. There's those kind of three job classes that you can have in the game. And each driver, you can have up to three drivers in your team, and each driver can have up to three blades. So you can have three, six, nine blades equipped at any one time, and you can switch them once the meter is filled, meaning you have to attack a couple of times before you can switch.
All right. Yeah. Well, I know I'm backlogged right now, but maybe if it's on sale or something.
Yeah, I think if it's on sale, it's something that you could get for sure. It's really fun. So far, the story has been pretty decent, and people have been saying in reviews that the story is pretty decent, which is good to hear, because JRPGs kind of have stories that tend to be kind of innocuous and don't, you know, are kind of all over the place. And, you know, or like the power of friendship. Literally, Rex is like, we'll beat this guy with the power of friendship. And I'm like, this is so fucking anime. And I love it. So I like that it's more kind of action RPG-esque in that regard. And it's very kind of, while the characters auto-attack, you have to do inputs in order for you to really take advantage of the combat system. And the game does a really good job of introducing elements slowly enough to where you can kind of understand like how the combat works before introducing another element, a layer on top.
That sounds a bit more like how like Final Fantasy XII, a lot of things are on auto.
Yes.
But you still have to be very, like very, very active.
That's very active
in fights you want to be active in.
That's a really good
comparison.
And
fights that you don't need to be active in, you can just auto attack whatever.
Yeah, that's a really good comparison. You don't have like the gambit system to where you can literally like stand back and let the game play itself out. But it feels a lot like that at its core, which is really cool, which is a good comparison. So I would agree with that for sure. So that makes you kind of want to go back to Final Fantasy XII a little bit.
12's really good. Yeah. That game's underrated.
Yes.
So some of the other stuff that we're playing are the same things. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to talk about Wolfenstein New Colossus for a minute.
Yeah, go for it.
And then we can talk about the stuff we've both been playing together. So I finished Wolfenstein New Order.
Yeah. How do you feel about that?
Wolfenstein New Order is really good. It's weird because it starts off incredibly generic.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, sort of the point. And then that game's story just takes off in a really good way. Also, I don't know, man, 2017 is a good year to be killing Nazis in video games.
I would say so.
More than usual. It's very cathartic.
Yeah.
And that game's gory. Like, you definitely kill people in ways that's just nasty.
Yeah.
So what's really cool is that New Colossus picks up literally right after the end of New Order. New Order kind of ends on a big, like, definitely could have ended the series there if they wanted to. Ends on kind of a big moment that seems pretty conclusive. And what's really cool is New Colossus picks up a little bit after that. And New Order was all based in Europe, pretty much. Mm-hmm. New Colossus is, like, all in America.
Yeah.
So you go to Manhattan, you go to, like, New Mexico, you go to New Orleans. And so what's really interesting is seeing how the Nazis basically winning World War II would affect America. And it's set in, like, the 60s, 70s, mm-hmm. like, very kind of hippie-ish timeline.
Yeah.
And it's just really interesting. The game is – there is a surprising amount of very, like, cutting and incisive commentary against not just, like, obviously, like, white supremacy, but also white culture.
Yeah.
When you get to America in the game, the leader of the American resistance is this really amazing black woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, like, a mother, and she's a badass, and – your conversations with her off the bat are really cool. Cause, like, you're kind of expressing some sentiments as this white Jewish guy who you play, Billy Blazkowicz, who's the same character who was in the first game. Mm-hmm. Who's just a big, like, potato head. it's just a huge jock.
Yeah.
But there are points in that game where, like, you have conversations with the leader of the resistance and you express some things that aren't necessarily, not necessarily wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely, like, from your, even though, like, Jewish, you're also kind of white passing white. You look like a Nazi because you have blonde hair and blue eyes,
right, right.
Background. Mm-hmm. And she kind of takes you to task in a conversation, and it's just really fucking good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So same issues out of the first game. The gunplay is loose, especially if you're coming from playing something like Destiny where it's really tight.
Right.
That's really my main complaint. The other thing, I haven't finished it. I'm probably a little bit more than halfway through. What's really cool about the beginning of the second one, and this isn't really spoilers because it's basically the beginning of the second game, the character that you are in love with in the first game is pregnant when the second game starts with, I think, twins. You are also, like, from how the end of the first game goes, you're, like, really, really fucked up. You're dying, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Your body's just too fucked up to get back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
So the first half of the game is really about you as a character who's incredibly weak. You basically get an augmentation that allows you to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even like your health is only at your max health is 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And your armor's at 200. Later in the game, that swaps around.
Yeah.
But like it is a really cool mechanic that is tied into the fact that you are physically, like, dying.
Yeah.
And so the beginning of that game really deals with that you're playing as a dying character who doesn't know how to process that grief, and also, like, how do I have that conversation with this woman who I want to be my wife, who's having my children, mm-hmm. knowing that I won't be around for them to be raised.
Yeah.
And I have to keep my, like, mind on the fact that I'm trying to, like, help start a resistance and rebellion in America against Nazis. It's just surprisingly, like, you actually, as much of a big jock as the main character is, you really care about him really quickly, and you really care about all the characters, and they're just really good.
Yeah.
That game is surprising as fuck to me, story-wise. There is a change that just happened, like maybe a couple hours before where I am in the game now, that's made me way less interested in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It might still end up really good, but it just, a lot of the conflict that made it such an interesting character study to me, the story is still really good, just the conflict that made some stuff really interesting with characters is sort of resolved,
yeah.
or gone, at least at the moment, mm-hmm. and it just makes it less interesting from a character study standpoint.
Yeah.
But for a game that's, like, based on Wolfenstein, like, old Wolfenstein, and is about shooting Nazis, they went crazy on making a really cool story. So that's, I definitely suggest it. I suggest pick up New Order. You can get it super cheap.
Yeah.
and play through it, because you could play New Colossus on its own, but I don't know why you'd want to, because right. It starts right after New Order starts.
Yeah, I think it makes sense to play that first before going into that one, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Besides that, I played a little bit of Bound, which was, it's one of the free PS4 games. Mm-hmm. Really interesting. It's like this indie game. I don't even know how to describe it. Like, your movement, everything is like really cool graphically, really interesting looking, kind of vectory based graphics. You are... The game opens with like a woman, like a pregnant woman walking out into the beach. Yeah. I think she's pregnant. And then you're in this like kind of different fantasy world where all you know is that you are this character. There is a queen that you're in service to. And there is a terrible like kind of scourge that is taking over the land. All of your movements in the game are like ballet movements, basically.
Oh, wow.
Like your walk cycle is like ballet movement walk cycles. Wow. And like when you do things, it's like all these other, it's like really pretty, and you kind of have like these ribbons floating around you as you move. I haven't played through much of it. The impression I'm getting so far, I think it seems like it's potentially dealing with abuse, like spousal abuse, mm-hmm. as a narrative. There's been some hints to that, so I'm really curious to play that and kind of see what that story is being told.
Mm-hmm.
The gameplay so far is like, to me, it might as well be a walking simulator, which would be fine, because if it's a good story, I don't care.
Yeah.
But that was interesting. And then the other stuff, we're both playing. So we can talk about Puzzle Fighter.
Yes.
And Pocket Camp.
So, Ruben, mm-hmm. do you want to see my kung fu?
I'll show you.
Yeah, I'll show you.
So Puzzle Fighter came out, I think, the same day as Pocket Camp on iOS, or close to.
Yeah, they came out pretty close to each other.
So it's Street Fighter, and it's Capcom, actually. So when you get to a certain tier, like Mega Man X, I think it's X, is a character that you can choose. It's Puzzle Fighter. If you've played Puzzle Fighter before, it is that game. It has online competitive mode, yep. which is really fun mm-hmm. and really cool.
Mm-hmm.
It is fucking elbow deep in like microtransaction stuff.
Oh, it is just, it's all over the place.
You can play it as much as you want, but... If you want to unlock characters or unlock things to make your fighters stronger, like, you make no progression. Like after you get the initial, like,
three.
Little bit of introductory yep. area done, you make, like, no progression nope. without spending money, pretty much. It takes forever.
Yeah, it's definitely pay to win.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. 100%. Which sucks. But... If you want Puzzle Fighter on the go, it totally fulfills that purpose.
Yeah.
And it's fun. And I play competitive matches all the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm not good at Puzzle Fighter.
Yeah.
And I'm not getting slammed constantly.
I'm not great at it either, but I'm also, not losing every match.
And matchmaking's fucked up, though, because, like, there's a little score that you have, like, a rating, and I'm, like, 500-something.
Yeah.
And I frequently get matched with people that are, like, 2,000-something, which does not... like makes sense.
No, not at all.
The art direction's weird. It's a weird, like,
it's not good.
It's like the best, it's like someone saw like chibi anime art and was like, that's really cute and cool, how can we make this look
bad,
like as bad as possible? Like, it looks like it's like they wanted to make it look kind of like people did in Street Fighter 4 in some ways.
Yeah.
But then make them chibi.
It's this weird, like, it feels like, you know, when in like the early 2000s, when people were like, huh, anime, that's a thing that came from Japan that the kids seem to like. Why don't we do that?
Yeah, like a Western artist saw chibi art and was just like, I'm going to make chibi art. But not make it anime at all.
You want to know what it looks like? It looks like those Christopher Hart How to Draw manga books.
Oh, no.
Ugh. That's what it looks like.
It does. That's pretty good, actually. That's a pretty good way to describe it.
That's what it looks like to me. And it's... The game in and of itself is fun. Like, of course, you give me Chun-Li. I'm going to pick her and because she's everything and she's perfect and she's wonderful. But if I hear her say, want to see my kung fu... I'll show you. One more time, I'm going to throw my phone. I mean, I'm not going to throw my phone because it's a very expensive phone, but yeah.
Oh my God, speaking of throwing phones, I missed, what was it? Best Buy had Disgaea 5 complete for Switch,
yeah.
like on sale during Black Friday for like $15, $20.
And you didn't buy it.
And I went to go buy it, and then I forgot for a minute, and I went back, and it was sold out. Fuck. And I was just like, fuck.
Bummer.
Anyway, yeah. Not about this guy, but I was upset.
Yeah, no, I'd be upset too. So Puzzle Fighter mechanically is very, very fun. And it's Puzzle Fighter through and through is exactly what it is, which that's what you come there for. I just wish the art was better, but that's kind of my tagline for Capcom in this era is Capcom, I wish the art was better.
Yeah, please make the art better. Please art better.
But the other thing that both you and I are playing are Animal Crossing Pocket Camp.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny, I was at my little part-time gig, and someone was like, oh, you're playing the new Animal Crossing game, and how is it? And I said, have you played, like, Animal Crossing New Leaf, or any Animal Crossing game in the past? He's like, yeah. So, it's that. It's more of that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my coworkers laughed, and he was like, that's the most, like, honest and real description of something ever. I'm like, yeah, it's more of the same, and it's fine. Like, if you like Animal Crossing, which I do, and that's totally fine, but, you know, it's definitely Animal Crossing on a mobile device, and now, with how good that game looks on mobile, I can't wait to see what an Animal Crossing game on Switch looks like.
Oh, it looks amazing on iPhone. Mm-hmm. It's the way I don't really ever play Animal Crossing, but my girlfriend's obsessed with it. Erin plays it all the time. She's like level, I think, 30 something. Wow. Or 40. I'm like level 17,
I'm like level 19. 3.
Yeah, I've been playing it a bit because I think it's fun. The way I would describe it to somebody is it feels like, you know, like sometimes when like games you get a demo for a game, and that demo really only like has like, cool, here's this like one mechanic in the game that kind of explains what the game is, but like not the more stuff, not more interesting things, or like not the variety.
Yeah.
This game is that. This game like took one aspect of Animal Crossing, which is collecting resources and giving them to people. It took that, and then it took like a little bit of the happy home designer, design your room, design your thing, and that's it. Which is fine, but Animal Crossing has like so much other stuff going on, and like so much like town management, and there's just a much, and I get it, it's a mobile game. And I think it makes the game lose its charm a little bit. Like, it's still very charming, I still like it, the characters are still really good and cute, but all these like little interesting cute things that you just kind of stumble across in Animal Crossing, especially like on certain days or holidays or things that only happen at night or whatever, where you just are like, oh, this thing just happened. Like, you have stories that happen in normal Animal Crossing where you get to do something and the character does something. Like, there's, I don't know if I'd call it emergent gameplay necessarily, but sort of along those lines.
Yeah.
And this game doesn't have that.
No,
this game is...
No, it doesn't.
Collect things to level things up, to build more things, to keep doing that, to maybe eventually want to spend some money to make that go faster. And, like, that's really it. Yep. And that's fine. Yeah. Like, I still think it's really fun. And I think it's a really good, distillation of what Animal Crossing's about. Mm-hmm. I still think Nintendo's best mobile transition so far has been Fire Emblem.
Oh, yeah. It's by far the best of all of their mobile endeavors.
Because for the most part, like, there is a lot more in Fire Emblem too, but for the most part, like, it gets, I feel like, 75% of what Fire Emblem is, which is, like, tactical battles and fucky characters. Mm-hmm. You can't make them date. That's, like, the main thing that's missing. And the story in the mobile game is kind of weak.
Yeah.
But making that a, like, gachapon-style game, where it's about getting character unlocks, is smart. It sucks that it kind of ends up being a little bit play to win that way. But it's just really faithful to getting that experience.
Yeah.
Animal Crossing is also very good.
Yeah.
I feel like it's missing a lot of the charm.
Oh, and Super Mario Run as well, I think, is a really good a really good version of Mario on mobile.
Yeah.
And that one's like, you just pay for it and then that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah,
which is nice about that.
Which is what I really like about that a lot. So Yeah, I think, if anything, about Nintendo's mobile endeavors is that it's a great introductory piece to the IPs on their established consoles for people to get into. Because for some people, Pokemon Go was their first Pokemon game. And
yeah, absolutely.
And the shady side of me is like, I'm sorry, but in all honesty, that's cool that like it's getting people otherwise who wouldn't play Pokemon into it, and then that piques that curiosity as to what like a full-fledged Pokemon experience is going to be like. So then they might have bought Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon as their first Pokemon game and really enjoyed it. And if Fire Emblem Heroes is their first Fire Emblem game, that might want them to maybe pick up Awakening or Fire Emblem Fates. So it's cool that they have these offerings, because I think what people were most concerned about when Nintendo announced that they were going into the mobile space is that they were going to drop doing anything on their actual consoles, like the 3DS or the Switch or the Wii U at the time. But all of these games are complements to their actual Nintendo system counterparts. And I think, if anything, it kind of like gives people a taste of kind of what those games are like. And then when they see like the new Nintendo Switch versions of all these games, it might entice them like, oh, I have some familiarity with this, so let me actually try what a full-fledged version of this game is like and go from there.
Oh, it's absolutely it's a drug dealer thing, right?
They're
giving you the little taste, and it's like, you want more of that shit? Mm-hmm. You can do two things. You can spend a bunch of money on mobile and be a whale and like, exactly. get more shit. Or you can buy one of our systems and play like the full game. Yep. Like, that's 100% what it is. And it's smart. And the good thing is that I think Nintendo isn't just like dumping these games. You can argue like how good they are, how faithful they are. Right. But I think what Nintendo is doing is that they are, all of them, they've been imbued with a very Nintendo sense of charm and polish.
Yes.
They're still protecting the IP.
Yeah, absolutely.
100%. So that's why it's working. And I'm looking forward to more. I think more mobile Nintendo things is good. I've definitely been playing. It's made me play. I never play games on my phone.
Yeah, I never play games on my phone.
It's definitely been making me game on my phone way more, for sure.
Yeah, so what I do like is that I feel like game studios are entering the mobile space as making experiences that complement their full-fledged experiences on their consoles or PC. And I think that's the ticket to drawing in people that really only experience games through the mobile lens into going into console or to PC, is that you're giving them a taste of kind of like at a glance what the game is. And they're like, oh, these concepts are interesting, so let me try going into the real thing and see what it's really about. And I think that's where mobile works. I think that's where mobile games finds its place, especially when established console and PC game developers get into that landscape, on how they bring people in to these more hardcore experiences that more traditional gamers are used to. But
totally agree. Yeah. And I feel like, do we know what the next one's going to be?
We don't know what the next Nintendo mobile venture is going to be beyond that. But rumors are circulating that the next Nintendo Direct is going to be in January, which makes sense because all their holiday titles are now out. Mario Odyssey is out. Xenoblade is out. You can actually find Nintendo Switch systems in stores. I've seen them, which is crazy to me. I think that everything that they promised to deliver for holiday 2017 is now available in retailers, and we'll get the next wave of what we can expect going into Q2 and Q3 of 2018 in January, which I'm excited to see what they're going to show.
I would make a pretty big guess that, because they do have a calendar of like big stuff for 2018. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make a guess that 2018 is going to be a year where they focus on getting virtual console set up.
Yes.
And they focus on utilizing their back catalog.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think we're going to really start seeing the third-party apps coming to the system now that Hulu is on Switch. soon I'm hoping we're going to see Crunchyroll, we're going to see Netflix, we're going to see Amazon and all those things coming over to it, the web browser. I think those are the kind of the key components that are really going to differentiate the Switch going into 2018 and make it more of a reason to purchase. So,
and if they keep up their momentum with indies, like, it is the thing I play all my indies on now.
Yeah, it's really good for that. And quick shout out about Battle Chef Brigade. So good.
I need to play it. I haven't played
it
yet.
Good. Me too. It's so good.
Cool. Let's hit some news real quick, and then we can pop up for some questions.
Let's highlight a couple of things. So I'm going to delete one of these things because it's kind of like, meh, it's not a big deal. Mega Man 11.
Mm-hmm. It looks good. I'm surprised.
Yeah. So aside from Monster Hunter World, which is where all of Capcom money is going into, which is fine because that game looks beautiful.
And the beta's this weekend if you're on PlayStation Plus. Yes, the beta. So do that.
Yeah, I'm about to be on that shit on Sunday. It looks good. It looks like a Mega Man game. I need to go back and watch the trailer and hear his voice because I hear it's like weird.
It's too low for his character design. Mm-hmm. Like if it was a Mega Man X game, the character voice I think would be fine because X has always been a more mature hero. Right. It is very low for Mega Man.
Yeah.
Just weird. I'm a huge, huge Mega Man fan.
Yeah, I know that you must be excited about this because you're a big Mega Man guy.
Yeah, and we've had not great/bad Mega Man games for a while. Mm-hmm. It's the 30th anniversary of Mega Man, which is why there's a bunch of announcements today. Mm-hmm. So Mega Man X Collection's coming out. It's 1 through 8 of all the X games, which is good and bad because like Mega Man X 1, 2, 3, 4 are all really excellent.
Really good, yeah.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3 are Super Nintendo. 4, 5, 6 are PlayStation.
I think.
And they're good. 4 was really good. 5 and 6 were iffy, but like still pretty good. Then there's 7, which is bad. It's 3D.
Yeah.
I don't remember 8 at all.
I don't remember it.
I don't think I played
Mega Man X8. I have no recollection of that game.
I think it was just another bad 3D one. They were both on PlayStation 2.
Okay.
So it's been a while. So that's cool. Those are coming out because X series is one of my favorite games. Mm-hmm. I think Mega Man X and X2 are two of my favorite games ever. What's nice though is that Mega Man 11 looks good. Like they're doing a nice kind of definitely a 2D art style, but it's in 3D. Mega Man's animations are a little bit weird. Like his movement animations look a little weird.
Yeah.
In that trailer, but he looks good.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that's just a polished thing, because he is a 3D model.
Yeah, because that game's supposed to release late 2018, so that game is nowhere near being finished, as far as we can tell anyway. So hopefully, you know, we see a little bit more polish, and, you know, cleaning up those animations a little bit, but I'm glad that, because Sega can't seem to get it together with Sonic, I'm at least glad that Capcom is trying to get it together with Mega Man.
One blue character can at least maybe get their shit together.
Maybe one of those blue characters can do it.
I think it's what bums me though is that I'm excited for 11. Really cool, looks nice. I really want to see Capcom take Mega Man to like the new generation. Mm-hmm. I want them to find a way to revitalize Mega Man as a brand and make a game that is more modern sensibilities. Mm-hmm. Like I think having the Mega Man series where you just run left and right is great too. But honestly, like I would love to see them try to do something with like a Mega Man Legends type game again.
Yeah.
Like I think Mega Man works really well as sort of a adventure RPG, but it's also a third person shooter because you never get that. Those things aren't usually together at all.
It's such a shame Mega Man Legends 3 didn't happen on the 3DS because those designs look real good.
I know, and Mega Man Legends 1 is really good, and The Misadventures of Tron Bonne is also really good. Yeah. They're like clunky. They handle like bullshit. They didn't age well.
Oh yeah, those games.
But the ideas behind them are really good.
So it's like, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
yeah. So yeah, Mega Man. So in this world where now loot boxes are kind of being exposed and dragged for kind of the bullshit that they are. Overwatch is deciding to introduce a new currency for their League skins. So since the Overwatch League starts, at the beginning of 2018, and those skins are going to be available for people to get in Overwatch, because some of the colors for them are really good. The ones that Kotaku used for the thumbnail of the article are, like, really bright, kind of like Tonka truck colored ones, and I'm not a huge fan of those on all of the characters. But
yeah,
they look kind of like Playmobil toys, but I like the idea of the because I've seen some of the skins for the teams that are going to be in the League, and some of them, the color combinations are really nice. I don't like this orange one.
You just, like, bad-mouthed your own team, because that's the San Francisco shot.
I mean, I guess because it's supposed to be orange for the Golden Gate Bridge, but, like, I feel like the Golden Gate Bridge color is a little bit more red than it is orange.
Absolutely,
but,
yeah.
I hope San Francisco does good in the League, but they're introducing a new currency, and they're going to be League tokens, I believe is what they're calling them. And, yeah, they're League tokens, and at least with these, it's you can use the League tokens to buy the skins that you want. It's not like a League loot box to where it's just like a crapshoot of whatever. At least you can get the thing that it is that you want. So if you wanted the Los Angeles team skin, one of the two LA team skins, you could go and get that particular skin. So,
and when they launch it, they're going to give everyone enough to buy one. So if you have a favorite team, you can at least get the skin for your favorite team off the bat. Yeah. I don't know how you're going to be earning them.
Yeah.
Like what the system for that's going to be. But we'll see. There's no Atlanta team, so I don't have a home team.
Yeah, that's weird. I'm surprised there's
I'm
surprised there's not an Atlanta team.
And I'm not, because the Atlanta scene for games is fighting games.
The fighting game scene in Atlanta is lit. Super.
Yeah, it's because Atlanta has such a huge young black male population. Yeah.
And arcades were the thing.
And fighting games, if you look at esports, how many black guys do you see on esports teams for Overwatch or most games that aren't fighting games?
Right, and I want to say something really quickly because I think it's really funny. So what's hella funny from my short time in doing Smash Brothers tournament commentary, that black people do hella games commentary for fighting games. So what's cool is in that space, you see a lot of black representation of that aspect of games. So, like, look at D1 and Prague and some of the other people that are in the Street Fighter space, they're all, like, black men, which is really cool to see that. So you're seeing, like, the black nerd in some capacity, but, you know, not in the queer capacity like you would get with yours truly. But it's cool to see, you know, black men being represented in those spaces and Latino people represented in those spaces as well, too, which is awesome. So that's really cool. That's a really cool aside that I wanted to make with that. But I'm glad that you brought that up about Atlanta and the fighting game scene. But other than that, we mentioned briefly that the Monster Hunter World beta begins this weekend, which if you have PlayStation Plus, you can just participate in it.
Yeah, I think you just have to download it and play it. I looked on the website. I did not see a registration for it.
Cool.
So double check yourself to make sure, because that could be stupid. Yeah. But I think you just have to be on PS Plus and download it.
Okay, and then the last bit of news that we had is what you're really into, is that Destiny.
Oh, yeah. We can talk about another time. Okay. All it is that the... okay, here's what I have to say about it. Curse of Osiris, which is the first DLC... drop that's coming to Destiny 2 comes out tomorrow. Actually, it would be loading right now, I think.
Nice.
I'm not that excited about it. Like, I'm sure that it's going to have fun new stuff for me to do, but it's... The new raid is part of the first raid. They just added some things. It's just, I don't know, the content that they revealed wasn't as... It didn't, like, draw me in like previous Destiny 1 expansions did. So we'll see. It might be great, but it's just dropping tomorrow. So I'll have to be checking it out throughout the week.
Very cool. So we'll take a short break and then we'll jump into the last segment of the day, which is our Twitter questions, my favorite part. So we'll be right back. we're back answering your questions from social media. If you ever want to submit questions to us, you can hit us up on Twitter at The Magical Boys on Twitter. You know, whatever shit you want us to talk about on the show, anything you want us to say, you can do that. Or if you want to go to magicalboyspodcast.com and send us an email. We would love to answer your emails on the show. Talk about whatever it is that you want to talk about. If you want us to words are really difficult to say.
You did it.
I did it. If you want us to talk about something that you're really passionate about, or you want to get like a second opinion on something, we're happy to do that too. So please hit us up. We love doing this part. This is kind of like my new favorite part of the show. So
it's the best part. I want to have enough like questions to do like almost.
I would love to do a whole show of questions. So please hit us up. We want to hear from you guys, and we love it. So our first question comes from one of our listeners. His name is Fonzie, and his question is: I'm going to let you answer this because this is all about you. What Mega Man X game was your favorite, and which game could you deal without?
I didn't even look at that question, so it's actually really serendipitous. either X or X2. I think they have the best music. I think they have the best bosses of any of them. I would probably X, just because I think I was such a big Mega Man fan and I was so into it. And then I played Mega Man X on Super Nintendo, and that game coming from Mega Man on Nintendo, like the first time you play X, it's just like, it's familiar,
yeah,
but it looks so amazing. And Mega Man always had really good music, and X is like, again, familiar because the music is so amazing, but it's like the fidelity, the sound fidelity on Super Nintendo was so much better. Like I remember, I think the entire soundtrack pretty much for X still, because it's really good.
It's really good.
Like the introduction of Zero as a new character was so cool. Mm-hmm. And then just like the ability to like, you had slides in Mega Man. Once, I think Mega Man 3 introduced the ability to slide, which became a staple in the series. Yeah. But X gave you dashing, which completely changes movement in the Mega Man series. It makes that game so much faster and so much more intense. Being able to charge up your special attacks and make huge special attacks, and like getting cool augmentations that like make you give you new abilities. So it's almost like Metroid style in a way, except nonlinear. It was just such a huge, like, they did such a good job of reinventing what Mega Man was while keeping it really familiar. Yeah. And I think X2 refined some of that, but it didn't have all of those feelings that I had for Mega Man X. Mm-hmm. Like, and right now I'm trying to think, I don't remember a lot from X2. Besides that, I remember it being good. I might remember more from X4, honestly, because that was the first one on PlayStation. So again, mechanically didn't change a whole lot, but like graphically it was like, oh wow, this looks like an anime. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. So probably X is my favorite. The one I could probably do without, I didn't play 8 at all, and I played some of 7, and it was terrible.
I literally have no recollection of X7 or 8.
They're 3D, like they're 2.5D technically. They're 3D, but on a 2D plane. Sometimes the perspective is switched, and it's like Crash Bandicoot style perspective. Shooting was, I don't know, just like, I don't know, Axel was a stupid character. Like, I couldn't get into him. He was like this like third Maverick Hunter added to the group on top of you and Zero. I just couldn't get into it. Oh, okay, the best thing, X4 is not my favorite, but X4 has a bunch of anime cutscenes.
Yeah.
And they have terrible, 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 terrible fucking voiceovers that are so, so bad. If you can find it, I'll have to look it up. There is a speedrun live stream of one of the cutscenes of Mega Man X where, like, it causes the game to, like, stutter really hard on one of the lines in one of the anime cutscenes because it's, like, an old disc.
Yeah.
And they talk about how this is a thing that can happen. And it just makes one of the characters repeat the same word, like, over and over again. And it makes me lose my shit every time. I'm going to show it to DJ after we're done.
Yeah, please show it to me.
But, yeah, 7 and 8 were just, like, trashy. They didn't know what to do with it in 3D, whereas I think Legends still didn't really know, but made a completely different, like, it made it, Legends was a Zelda game.
Yeah, Legends was a Zelda game.
It was a Zelda game that was a third-person shooter and had terrible fucking controls. He handled like a tank.
Yeah.
But that's why I want to see a new Legends of some sort now that, like, I think they could do a good job with that. Like, make, fuck, like, give me, like, Mass Effect, basically, but Mega Man. Like,
I could be into that.
Yeah, just give me a really good controlling third-person shooter Mega Man.
I could be into
or
that.
Like, yeah. Or even, like, a Metroid Prime type Mega Man. Like, a Metroidvania in the Prime sense, which makes total sense. You get new abilities from enemies that you defeat. So you could do a really cool, like, just, like, in general, a 2D Metroidvania or a 3D one like Prime. I'm getting excited talking about it. But, like, any of those things would be a cool way for the series to move forward. While I think keeping traditional Mega Man 2D games is also great, too. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
But, yeah, that answers that question for fun.
Yeah, no, I don't have a lot of experience with the Mega Man X series. I just remember the one that was on PlayStation because I remember the stage that was like, jump, jump, slide, slide. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember that vividly and getting my ass kicked. I think that was X4 because that was on the PlayStation.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, so our next question comes from K-Thrones, and K-Thrones says, do either of you have a game backlog, and how do you deal with the pressure of unfinished games? Does it stop you from enjoying / buying new ones? So let me tell you, as the king of the bitch that fucking buys games because I feel compelled to buy games on the days that they come out, it doesn't stop me from enjoying new games at all, but I have a giant backlog of games to play. And for me, because between having like a part-time job and then doing all my comic stuff, I have a lot of guilt when I stop working to play games because I'm like, oh, I probably should be working and doing responsible things. So it's easier for me to play games like Overwatch and Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom and stuff like that I can pick up and put down because it's so easy for me to just like, okay, like, I finished 2 hours or 3 hours of work. I'm going to go play a couple rounds of Overwatch, then I'm going to get back to work. But when it comes to games that that are, like, these are time commitments, like Persona 5 was a huge commitment, I would say if I work for 4 or 5 hours straight, I can play Persona for 4 or 5 hours straight and not feel bad about it. So there are a bunch of games that are in my backlog. I still need to finish Horizon Zero Dawn. I still need to finish... I still need to finish Nier Automata, and there are a couple of games that are in my backlog that I do want to finish, but I kind of have to be in the mood to play them. So I don't feel super bad about having a huge backlog. I just know that I really love games and I like buying them when they come out because I want to like be able to talk about them and kind of be part of that conversation when it comes to the new titles that are out. But there I tend to be the kind of person that plays 2 to 3 games at the same time. So I'll like jump from playing Xenoblade to jumping into playing Overwatch for a little bit. And then I might jump into Nier Automata. And that's kind of how I've always been when it comes to games. I usually juggle around 2 to 3 titles at the same time. So I don't really feel bad.
It's funny.
No.
It's funny because I have a huge back catalog, especially like my Steam back catalog is like disgusting from so many Steam summer sales and Humble bundles. There's one I feel guilty about, and that's Final Fantasy 15. And I talk about it on the show all the time. Like, I really want to finish that game.
I really wish that you would, because I want to talk about how much I don't like that game.
I want to talk about it because I know it gets buck wild. I know it gets fucking insane, like, story-wise. And I'm interested at how, whether it's good or bad, how insane it gets. I'm at least glad that the game I will be playing when I beat it is a much better version of the game that most of everyone else played. Yeah. A lot of issues are fixed. I can swap characters mid-fight now, which is cool.
For sure.
So I don't buy games on launch day as often as DJ, I would say.
I'm really bad.
If it's a game like I'm like really certain I'll be super into, I will. But usually like I give it some time. It's unless it's like a Nintendo game that's a first party title that I'm just like, I know, you know, like Zelda or Mario. I don't play multiple games at once usually. The way I play is it is siloed by what system they're on. So if I'm playing a game on PS4, like, that's all I'm playing on PS4 until I beat it, unless it's like a multiplayer game like Overwatch, because that has a different purpose right. for me. Whereas I might sometimes, instead of playing that game on PS4, go play a game on Switch, like when I get into bed or something. Or if I'm at my computer, I might fire it up and play a match of PUBG or League or something. Yeah. So it's really like platform specific for me. So yeah, that's tends to be how it goes. Sometimes I'll play a big AAA game and a small indie game, and usually that's like how I balance it out. I don't feel guilty, but I don't know. There is a slight sense of like I shouldn't buy these new games when I need to finish Final Fantasy 15 so badly. But I want to play them, because it's a lot of times if I don't play a game or if I don't buy a game pretty soon after it comes out, if I'm not given like explicit reasons why I should or why I need to, I'll miss it completely. Yeah. I just won't end up playing it. So yeah, I don't feel guilty about it, but I definitely, I don't know why Final Fantasy 15 I feel really guilty about, and like everything else
is fine. I mean, the reason why you feel guilty about Final Fantasy 15 is because I've talked so much shit about that game, and I want you to participate. You want to participate in the shit talk of the game. And I will just say briefly that there are a lot of things that I did like about Final Fantasy 15. I still don't think it is a Final Fantasy game. I think it's a game that Square Enix made that they called Final Fantasy. But that's for another conversation. I would love to do a whole show about that game. And when Ruben decides he wants to fucking finish that game, then we'll
maybe after I finish, like, let's see. Once I finish Wolfenstein, actually, besides like smaller indie stuff, I think, as far as major things I really want to play, I think I'm good for a little while. So that might be what I do. And then I'll get real upset.
You're
going
to be so upset. But our last question comes from our friend Aaron. And Aaron says, who's your favorite villain? Video game, show, whatever. Just tell me about those baddies.
Okay, so first answer, just like unequivocally, Dio Brando from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Dio is like, to me, like,
he is the worst.
There's not a
awful. Dio is,
and there's not a
fucking asshole villain. But I love him.
Villain. He's just like, he's so narcissistic and like so into him. I don't know, he's just so good. I love Bowser.
Yeah.
I think like the opposite side of the spectrum, Bowser is so not like an issue.
Yeah.
Like, and like Odyssey even shows it quite a bit. Like Bowser's, yes, terrible. But like also like oddly sweet sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like he's just, I don't know, he's just really grounded and cute. Yeah. Man, I'm trying to do some while I try to think of more, I guess.
Okay. So mine is kind of like a twofer kind of thing, because in Sailor Moon, all of the villains are, like, the baddest bitches on the planet. So, my favorite is when Nehelenia from Sailor Moon Super S comes back in Sailor Stars. Because there's, like, a little mini arc before the actual arc of Sailor Stars starts. And Sailor Galaxia is, like, because basically what happens at the end of Super S, so spoiler alert if you haven't watched Sailor Moon Super S, which, listen, the Sailor Moon anime has been on Hulu. All 200-plus episodes of that show are on Hulu. They have been on Hulu for over a year and a half. So if you don't want to hear this part, just don't listen to it. So at this end of Sailor Moon Super S, Sailor Moon seals Nehelenia inside of her own fucking dreams. So she's in eternal sleep forever.
That's some fucking, like, Uchiha shit from Naruto.
Yeah, that's some fucking Atemurasu. Fuck anime.
Is it the Mangekyou that does that?
No, what is it? The Mangekyou Sharingan that does that?
Isn't it?
The Amaterasu? Is that what it does? Anyway,
Anyway.
So at the beginning of Sailor Stars, there's this little mini arc before Stars actually starts, and Sailor Galaxia is like, psst. Hey, girl. Nehelenia, you awake, girl? Wake the fuck up, girl. And she's like, why are you waking me up? I'm beautiful and perfect and floating around in dream space, just sleeping and being gorgeous and stunning and beautiful and having this long-ass fucking weave. And Sailor Galaxia is like, hey, remember when you thought that you threw the little pink-haired bitch off a fucking skyscraper? So that fucking horse and Sailor Moon saved her. And they are alive, they are kicking it, they are kikiing, they are carrying on. These bitches are in high school, they are living their lives, they got boyfriends, they're just having a good old-ass time in high school, and they're living their whole fucking lives. Bitch, are you mad? And she's like, you're damn fucking right, I am pissed. Well, how about this? I'm gonna give you some powers so that you can come back to life and let these bitches know that I ain't dealing with your shit. So, basically what happens is that Sailor Galaxia gives Nihilenia this mirror, and she shatters this fucking mirror, and it puts all of these shards of the mirror into Tokyo, and fucking Mamoru Chiba, his fucking dumbass, who is the worst fucking character in the fucking show, who is the worst fucking boyfriend on the fucking planet, gets a shard of the fucking mirror into his eye, and then he becomes possessed, and Nihilenia was like, ha ha, bitch, got your man, bitch, what you gonna do about it? You gotta come into this dream world to come get your man back. And it's everything. And Nihilenia makes all these enemies that look exactly like her. Because like, bitch, you thought that you got rid of me, but now you're going to see my face and all these other fucking glass-ass bitches that look just like me. And what the fuck are you going to do? And it's everything. I love all of the villains in Sailor Moon, all like the big female villains so much in Sailor Moon, because they're just like, I'm going to take your man. I don't give a fuck. You're destined to be with him for it. He's the king of Crystal Neo Tokyo. I don't give a fuck. I'm gonna take your man. And what the fuck are you gonna do about it? And that's honestly like my favorite thing about Sailor Moon, because I feel like the villains are so fucking petty that they're like, I'm just gonna take your fucking husband. Come get him, bitch. And then she does, and some then she wins with the power of love and friendship. And she's like, this is why I'm the fucking queen of the moon, bitch. You don't know.
Because I like people, like, even though I'm
don't. Nice as fuck. And also, I don't have to play with your bullshit and have some sparkles and you're dead. Which is why Sailor Moon is perfect, iconic, amazing, show-stopping, perfect, beautiful, amazing. But the villains of the show, I love that they are just, like, so empowered, and they're just like, I'm gonna take your man, and what you gonna do, bitch? And all of that stuff is my favorite part of that, so I love all the villains in Sailor Moon. And I don't really consider Team Rocket to be villains, they're more, like, comedic relief, but I love them.
They're really good. They're perfect.
They're like, hey, kid, we're going to take your fucking Pokemon. And they're like, actually, we're really bad at taking people's Pokemon. And I really kind of like that, because they want to be bad so bad, but they like actually have a conscience at times.
Also,
Jessie Slays. She's everything. Yeah.
Out of control. Yeah.
And real quick especially in the 90s versions of the anime, with like the first like three or four seasons, the fact that they said fuck gender norms and Jesse was always the dude and James was always the girl. And I'm like, I see you, Pokemon. I see you. That's cute.
Do it.
I like that.
The Naruto thing I was talking about was the Infinite Tsukuyomi.
Yes, the Infinite Tsukuyomi. Yes.
That's what it was. Anyway.
That eye bullshit.
Speaking of, pretty much every villain in Naruto is good.
They're all so good.
All the major villains have like really amazing backstories. Madara is probably the best one. Like both Madara and Obito are both really amazing characters. Also, the other villain, because he's truly the worst, is Griffith from Guts. From Berserk, rather. Yeah, he came out of Guts. Oh my God. No. Griffith from Berserk. Just because, like, I don't know, he is. Berserk's problematic as fuck, and Griffith is literally the worst person ever in anything I've ever read. Like, but his story is also, like, before he goes, like, too, so crazy, his story is very sad and tragic. Like, it's such a good, sad, tragic story before he turns into an absolute monster. Yeah. But also a good. I've also heard that, you've been watching it, but I've heard Hunter X Hunter's villains are really good.
Hisoka is the best fucking villain ever. He's so good. He's so good. Yeah, I guess that was 2014, the remake of Hunter x Hunter. It's really good. Mm-hmm. It's not one episode of that anime that I have watched. I've watched close to 40 episodes of it. None of it is bad. All of it's really good.
I gotta start watching.
Oh my god, it's so good. I need to go back and finish it. It's so good. I'm been too distracted by these volleyball boys in Haikyuu. They're so good.
Yeah, Haikyuu is also very
and
good.
And and even with the fucking giraffe ass fucking necks, I've been watching Welcome to the Ballroom too, because it's
Is it good?
Like I really okay. like it. It's so extra and dramatic, but the actual art itself is like these are really good drawings, except for these fucking necks. Like, it's really, the necks are so, it's hard to watch because of how bad the necks are, but the actual drawings of the characters are really good, and it's not a bad sports anime, but...
No, I didn't hate the art style, just the necks.
But if you had to watch a sports anime that's in a backlog that you haven't finished right now, I would watch Haikyuu, because all those boys are good.
Haikyuu is really good.
All those boys are good. It's really good. All those boys are real good. I love those volleyball boys.
It's... real sweet and well done. Cool.
But
I think that's all we...
That kind of brings us to the end of our episode, which is good because we're right at an hour 30. So I know I've catch you a little bit later than...
No, it's fine.
Than intended. But, you know, any time I get to spend with you is a good time. So I just want to just keep you as long as I can. But so where can they find you, Ruben?
You guys can get me on Twitter at Rubots, at R-O-O-B-O-T-S. You can also check out the... comedy podcast I work on with two of my buddies called You're Welcome Hollywood. We just put up an episode that is a weird sort of Event Horizon sort of space like thing. It's hard to explain, but involves buttholes. It's really fucking stupid and gross. But you can check that out, and like I don't know, I think I'm like Rubots on Instagram and everywhere else. DJ, where can
you can find me at Oh Hey DJ on pretty much everything. That's at Ohhey DJ. You can find me pretty much on everything with that. And guys, gals, non-gender conforming folks that listen to our show,
everybody,
I've been getting DMs from you guys on either Twitter or Instagram about you leaving us reviews on iTunes and Google Play. That means everything to us. Because, like, whenever I get those, I always, screenshot those and share them with Ruben. It's really, really important to us that you guys give us this feedback. And we really, really like it. Because that makes us want...
Keep it together, DJ. Don't get messy,
DJ.
I'm not going to get messy.
It's really cool that we get this feedback from you guys because it keeps us going. It's cool to know that there are people out there that listen to us and enjoy our show. And the one week that we were late, I got a tweet from someone on the Magical Boys account that was like, "Where's the episode?" And I was like, "Oh shit. People are like, it is Wednesday. And where is the show? Where the fuck is it?" And that's cool that people look forward to hearing us and seeing our show and all that good stuff. And that goes a long way. I'm so happy to have people that love listening to us and seeing people not on any pretense of us, like, tweeting about us to their friends that are like, "What are some queer POC podcasts about pop culture that I can listen to, or about games?" And they're like, "You need to listen to Magical Boys." That's so cool. That's so fucking cool. So, like...
It really, really is. I know for me, and I think DJ probably is in the same boat, like, I think we've basically fallen back to every other week at this point. I know we're both so busy, and I think sometimes being so busy, like... Because this is a thing that we have fun doing and we do for you guys to listen to. It's also just like time for me to hang out with DJ. There's times where I can feel like, oh, God, like, I don't have the... I'm so busy. This is going to be hard to get done. Or I'm going to be doing it really late at night like we're doing tonight. And that feeling sometimes of just like, well, maybe, like, maybe we'll just skip this week or whatever else. Hearing all that feedback and you guys sending us messages and reaching out and adding us on Twitter and stuff, it definitely makes me go, like, it reminds me to, like, dedicate even more to doing this, because you guys are loving it so much and putting that love out there. And I want to make sure that we're giving that love back to you guys by being here every other week for y'all. So that's, like, really cool. So we really, really appreciate that. Hopefully we're doing that for you guys. Hopefully we're making you feel good. We're giving you an hour or two on your commute or whatever else to laugh and be nerdy and be queer or not queer or whatever. And like, if we're doing that for you guys and you guys can spread that to your other friends that are maybe in the same boat as POCs or queer or non-gender conforming or whatever, that makes it so rad to do. And it makes me want to do it.
I look forward to this time because I mean, I love getting to hang out with Ruben whenever I can, and being able to produce content for you guys and listening to other podcasts around people of color and sharing their voices on things has been a really cool experience, because it's like, this is a forum for us to where we can be unapologetically queer, we can be ourselves and be unapologetically nerds and all that stuff, and it's unfiltered. Anything that we don't want in the show, we don't put in it, and for better or for worse. But it's, you know, we get to kind of be raw with you guys. I hope this is kind of like a respite for you to laugh and to have fun, because shit's rough right now for all of us, and there's some real ass shit happening right now. And while we might not always talk about those things, we at least want to be an escape for you to laugh and to have fun, because I think there is such a need for laughter and fun right now with everything that's going on. So we love you guys. Please keep sending the reviews to us. We really love that feedback. Please write to us. We want to answer your questions on the show. We want to do a show where all we do is answer your questions and talk about whatever it is that's on your minds. Leave us those reviews. Those help majorly, both on Google Play and on iTunes. We love it. We need it. It's everything that we could... All that feedback helps us make a better show. So I think that's about it for both of us this week. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye!
Bye! Yeah. Thank you.